What does life look like for COVID-19 patients after they get out of the ICU?
People say, oh, it's the flu, we'll just get better. You get this, it's going to take a long time to recover from.
Plus, U.S. economists are predicting a recession, what that means for the rest of the world. It's Thursday, April 9th. I'm Kateri Yoakum with The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. There are now nearly 1.5 million reported cases of the coronavirus worldwide, including more than 430,000 in the U.S. Wednesday was the deadliest day so far. The pandemic has now killed more than 14,600 people in the U.S. It's also brought the economy to a standstill. Coming up later in the show, we'll talk about what the grim forecast means in the global context. Weekly jobs numbers come out this morning. Economists are projecting another 5 million people could have filed for unemployment in the past week, slightly down from the record 6.6 million from the week before. But our labor economics and policy reporter Eric Morath says there are a few factors that could drive those numbers up or down.
If the systems are working better, that could lead to sort of a surge in unemployment. And so I wouldn't be shocked to see it be more than 6 million. If places like New York and California, where obviously there's a lot of people who work, their claims had been relatively low. I mean, it's still record levels, but relatively low to places like Pennsylvania and Ohio. And so if they sort of clear the backlog, it could be a record week. Also, the stimulus bill kind of provides an incentive for people who normally can't file for unemployment, like gig workers, like self-employed people, they're now cleared to file. So maybe some of those people, even if they were affected several weeks ago, could be filing. And on the other side of it, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin and others are really pushing the loan program, which is keep your workers on your payroll. Don't lay them off. Don't put them in unemployment. And then we'll forgive your loans when this is all said and done. So that could have the opposite effect of maybe keeping claims in check, because maybe now some businesses are starting to get those loans and not laying people off.
As part of the effort to support those payrolls, Republicans on Capitol Hill are trying to quickly approve another $251 billion in aid to small businesses. But Democratic leaders are proposing a broader plan, calling for new aid for businesses to be joined by $250 billion in funding for hospitals and state and local governments. An administration official said the White House is opposed to that, but Republicans will need Democratic consent if they want to get the bill passed this week through what's known as a voice vote. President Trump and the World Health Organization have been exchanging barbs over the coronavirus. The head of the UN agency, Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, warned on Wednesday that politicizing the rapid spread of the virus could lead to more deaths.
It exploits the differences you have at the national level. If you want to be exploited, and if you want to have many more body bags, then you do it. If you don't want many more body bags, then you refrain from politicizing it.
Earlier in the week, President Trump said he was looking into cutting U.S. funding to the WHO. On Wednesday, he doubled down, saying that the organization had criticized his decision to shut down flights from China.
I think they have to get their priorities right, and their priorities are that everybody has to be treated properly, every country. And it doesn't seem that way, does it? It doesn't seem that way. So we're going to do study, investigation, and we're going to make a determination as to what we're doing.
And the Trump administration is planning to restrict the export of certain face masks and gloves. For the next 4 months, FEMA would have to grant explicit approval for exports of those items, with certain exceptions. President Trump had been in a dispute with 3M for not allocating more of their N95 masks for domestic use, and eventually announced plans to buy 167 million masks from the company. Meanwhile, the widespread use of face masks is also a central part of Europe's plan to loosen their lockdowns and gradually reopen. As part of that effort, Germany is stocking up. The country struck a deal with China for large-scale shipments, and by the end of the week, over 40 million face masks are slated to arrive from China to the country. Economists are now forecasting a severe economic contraction this spring. In a Wall Street Journal poll out this week, they predicted on average that the unemployment rate would hit 13% by June and could still be at 10% by December. They also now expect that GDP will contract at an annual rate of 25% in the second quarter. That's a sharp downgrade from our March survey, when economists forecast a reduction in GDP of just 0.1%. Our markets reporter, Anna Isaac.
These are really shocking, and they reflect, you know, the absolute standstill we've seen in economic activity because of the lockdowns in the US and elsewhere. You're seeing a similarly troubling picture emerging from Germany, with forecasts for GDP growth there really falling off a cliff. And it feeds into this point that this is a recovery where investors are looking to see how small businesses can find their way back from this. Now, there have been lots of different government schemes, but the Fed has really stepped in this week to try and find ways to get cash into the hands of small business owners so that they can drive this recovery, so that it eases this dramatic rise in unemployment that we're seeing out of the US. And this, for investors, they're describing it as a sort of, they need to see a boots on the ground intervention from the Fed here. They need to see cash really getting to those small companies so that they can rehire the staff that have been very rapidly, very sharply laid off in the US.
Across the U.S., thousands of critically ill COVID-19 patients have been admitted to intensive care units and placed on ventilators, which pump oxygen into the lungs of those unable to breathe on their own. We've talked about how hospitals are trying to secure more of these potentially life-saving devices, but they're hardly a cure-all. According to a recent British study, nearly two-thirds of early COVID-19 patients given ventilators or other advanced respiratory support ended up dying. And doctors still have a lot to learn about their path to recovery. What they do know is that those who spend an extended amount of time on ventilators after any critical illness face a very difficult road. We've been speaking with some of these patients, and senior editor Mark Marimount has been looking into what their recovery will look like, and he joins us now. Mark, thanks for joining me.
Glad to be here.
So, Mark, you spoke with a number of patients who've been through COVID-19 and come out on the other side. One of the people that you spoke with was Maury Hanks. He's a 57-year-old scout for the NBA's Detroit Pistons. He was put on a ventilator on March 24th and was just taken off last week. Here's what he told us.
Being in the hospital that long with the tube down my throat that long, I basically had a 12% chance of getting to, where I'm at today.
So Maury said he didn't have any pre-existing conditions that could have complicated the COVID-19 illness for him. Why is the survival rate here so low when it gets this far down the road?
It seems to be a very, very serious illness, which I think is not incredibly well understood by doctors yet. And it doesn't follow the normal course of a pneumonia type illness, and is, I think doctors are still feeling their way through how to treat it best.
So we want to talk a little bit about what this road to recovery looks like. Maury is out of the hospital now, but he said he's still in pretty bad shape.
I'm far from 100%. I'm still I'm still very, very weak. I don't have great balance. I have to have my wife with me.
So is this typical for post-ICU patients? What other kinds of lingering conditions do doctors say they could be dealing with in the aftermath of COVID-19?
Well, you have to divide these into short-term problems or conditions and potential long-term ones. From our reporting, it appears as though many patients who come off ventilators suffer from delirium. They see, they are paranoid. They think people are trying to hurt them, or they get confused about things. And then they also have fairly severe weakness. This is being critically ill like this for 7 or 10 days in the hospital is far worse than being in a full body cast for a month in terms of the amount of muscle loss, muscle mass you lose. But there are a whole range of long-term effects that not everyone, but about half of the people who have critical illnesses like this end up suffering in terms of cognitive impacts, like things that almost like an Alzheimer's or a brain damage, mild brain damage type of thing, or some physical ailments. A lot of people, even 5 years on, could not walk as far as a control group. And a number of people have either post-traumatic stress disorder or some kind of mental health problems. In fact, there are people now who were in the ICU years ago, and they're terrified that they're going to get this COVID-19 and end up back in the ventilator.
Maury was really adamant that this was nothing like the flu, even though COVID has been compared to the flu.
This is no joke. I hate to, like you said, people say, oh, it's the flu, we'll just get better. You get this, it's going to take a long time to recover from.
And just talking again about this prognosis, what are doctors saying? How long do they expect a full recovery to take?
Well, I think, obviously, the severity of the illness is greatly dependent on, you know, the reaction of the individual person. And we're seeing people from, you know, any range from somebody with almost no symptoms to mild symptoms. When people say mild, sometimes it's like a pretty bad pneumonia, but you're able to stay at home. And the folks that we're focusing on here, who are ones who were so ill that they needed to be in the intensive care unit and on a ventilator, I think there's no telling how long their recovery could be, but I suspect it's going to be very similar to other people who are on ventilators before. And it's going to be, you know, several months till they get back to feeling physically close to normal. And hopefully they're going to be the lucky ones who do not suffer long-term health and mental health and cognitive impact. But we don't really know yet.
All right. Senior Editor Mark Merriman, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
And finally, Wednesday night marked the beginning of the Jewish celebration of Passover. Traditionally, it includes the retelling of how Moses led the Jews out of Egypt at the family Seder meal. Many families around the world are giving the gathering a new high-tech twist this year to comply with social distancing rules. Our senior personal tech columnist Joanna Stern explains.
Fundamentally, Passover and Seder are going to be very different this year because usually this is a big gathering of people around one table. Now this is going to be a gathering around our devices, around our laptops, our tablets, at a table, and we're all going to meet virtually, sort of recreating this long ritual and this big dinner where we interact and we sing and we read and we say prayers. And so we're going to all try to do that now over Zoom or your video chat platform of choice there. One thing that's really interesting about the digital tools is people are getting pretty clever about the other digital tools they use to sub in. So I've heard some fun stories, some kids making PowerPoints or presentations. One thing that often happens during these dinners is kids really present or they bring their projects from school. And so this is one way that they can show everyone in the family what they're thinking about in terms of the holiday. There's another ritual tradition where kids go and look for the matzah, and the person who finds the matzah or the afikomen, they get a present at the end. And I've heard that many are starting to use Venmo there. So if somebody finds it, they hide it in their own thing, but somebody else finds it first in their location, somebody will send them some money virtually.
How are you adapting your family traditions because of the pandemic? You can leave us a voicemail at our hotline, 315-992-8298. And we're also taking your COVID-19 questions. We'll have our reporters and experts get you some answers. And that's what's news for this morning. We'll be back with another updated podcast this evening, and we'll keep covering the pandemic and other stories on WSJ.com and in our app. I'm Kateri Yoakum with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.